I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's balmy but somewhat overcast in West London today, but none of that matters because the Euros are starting in, what, 24 hours in the eternal city of Rome, Italy against Turkey, and we'll be previewing the four groups that we didn't preview on Monday, Jules. Plus, a lot of other stuff. Our boy, Paulo Fonseca, in the front seat at Spurs. Yes. Our other boy, Ange Postecoglou, in the front seat at something.
It's a good day for our friends.
It's like you and I run the football in the world. We already know. So, but let's go right into that. Let's go right into Group C. And we've got Holland, Austria, Ukraine, and North Macedonia. Off the top, we've been very critical of Frank de Boer.
Yeah.
You especially.
Yeah.
With your great feelings of love for Dutch coaches. Yeah. But they're not going to screw this up in the group stage because they just have far too many good players.
I mean, this would be the worst. It would be the worst ever flop that we've seen. Worse than Germany in 2018 at the World Cup. Worse than anything else you want. France, you know, to anything that you can think of if they screw this up in the group stage. In a group like this, with North Macedonia and Ukraine and Austria.
I mean, it's arguably the worst of the six groups.
Yeah, you could say that's where. Quite an open group as well, because I do think that
Ukraine and Austria are to a similar level.
Right. They play differently and they've got different strengths and assets and weaknesses. And North Macedonia is a great story. And who knows, they can maybe surprise a few people. But certainly for Holland, I mean, I don't think De Boer is a good manager. We've said that before, certainly at club level. Now he managed to almost destroy everything good that Koeman had built when he was in charge of this national team. They've got so much talent in every position. And yet he tries to make them play in a formation with a three at the back that doesn't suit either Dutch footballing historically, but also this squad. He certainly has taken a lot of the momentum away that they had. So
let's talk about this at the back, because Matthijs de Ligt, I think it's still touch and go whether he's going to be fit for the first game. But you could look at this on paper and you say de Ligt, de Vrij, like it's not. That's even without Virgil van Dijk. Obviously, he was injured, but still a pretty darn good defensive partnership.
Yeah, why do you need a third one there? Like, why?
So you can push on your very talented wing backs, which, no.
No. Still not. And also, three at the back means, okay, you push the wing backs, but it's a man less in midfield where that's where you can control the game far better.
I mean, unless he's planning something kooky, like having De Ligt step into midfield. With De Jong in the back three and stepping into midfield.
Yeah, and then let him be like Beckenbauer and he can go everywhere, or Matthäus and he can do everything.
Or indeed, like Frank de Boer's brother.
I mean, although that's not the idea, we know it.
Further up, I mean, I wrote my preview sort of the guy I thought who would be, you know, for each team, the guy who I think is like sort of the star or whatever. And I went with Memphis Depay.
Yeah, you had to.
Memphis Depay has had to carry this Holland team a lot up front. It shouldn't be the case, but he's carried Leon. I'm wondering, for him, this is a really big Euros because we're taking for granted that he's going for Barcelona. But I'm almost thinking, should you do that?
Definitely
if you're on a free,
not.
should you not at least wait, see what kind of Euros you have?
Completely.
Because I think he's a guy who, and we've seen him do this for Leon, we've seen this before. He's a guy who, when he's on song, he can play for himself, he can create his own shots. Yeah. He can do that. And I suspect that with Frank de Boer and the chaos around Frank de Boer, this is not going to be a Holland side that creates chances through patterns of play and systems. It's going to be more like lump the ball, get the ball to Memphis,
see what
happens.
Yeah, it's more individual quality, than anything else.
I mean, that's what kind of gets me. I could see them screwing up like you. I still think they're going to go through. I don't expect them to go much further than that. You like Austria, I suspect, more than I do.
I just think they've got such a talented squad. Really, when you look at a gap, when you look on every line, you've got talented, really talented players. I mean, David Alaba, of course. But
where is Alaba going to play? Because we saw him play in midfield. There's also some, but then
he played a left back against England, didn't he?
In that attacking midfield position, no, I think against England he started in. He played in midfield.
Oh, did he?
England.
Okay, yeah.
But there's Baumgartner, who I think is a really, really gifted young player.
Very good young player.
There's Sabitzer.
Yeah.
So already you've got, that's a bunch of attacking midfielders there that you have. Kalajdzic, they're all excited because he's big and he scores goals. Fair enough.
And he's got that confidence from a very good season at Stuttgart.
You're not a fan of Franco Foda, but...
I just think... Okay, he's been there with Germany and he played in big tournament. He's got that experience, no problem. As a manager, whether that was at Sturmgrass before, he never really did that great things, either in terms of idea or in terms of identity, even less in terms of results. And now he's got maybe the most talented Austrian squad ever. And yet, one of the most.
Okay, I have to bring up the 1930s.
Apart from the
Wunder team.
Yeah, okay.
Sindelar.
I mean, in the modern era, Gab.
Okay.
Thank you. Since there's no more wars. And they don't play well. They don't inspire me. I don't think they looked inspired themselves, to be fair. So it's one of those, a bit like De Boer. It would be such a shame if you don't make the most of having such a talented squad with you.
Well, this is why I think I might have Ukraine just ahead of them.
Maybe.
Very different style of play, I think, with Ukraine, with the 4-3-3. It's a lot more attacking, a lot more front foot than Austria. And I think in tournament play, despite France winning the World Cup last time,
you might have noticed.
I think actually more proactive teams tend to do better. Mm. And what I'm excited about is, I think, that midfield with Stepanenko, who's just there to be a ball winner and whatever. But then you've got Zinchenko, who we're going to see in a totally new role, playing in midfield with Ruslan Malinovsky, who's really just a winner.
Yeah,
I think.
Who had great 2021.
And a great end to the season as well.
Yeah.
I think that's genuinely exciting.
It is really exciting. And Shevchenko has done some good things. They went to Paris and tactically set up well to counter Kylian Mbappe. They drew 1-1, which was deserved. They have Zabani at the back, who is only 18, but certainly one of the most promising centre-backs of that generation. So it's great. It just might be a little bit of a lack of experience of having them been before all together, even for Sheva himself. This is all big, all new. So we'll have to see, but potentially.
I don't want to patronize North Macedonia, but I think they would be the first to admit that they are probably the tournament underdogs.
The underdogs.
Yeah. But Goran Pandev, obviously, it's an emotional, sentimental choice. We get to make that.
Yes.
We want to see Goran do well. What's remarkable about Pandev is, I think he made his, if I recall correctly, he made his debut in like 2000.
20 years ago.
He was
18, now he's 38.
No, I think he was 16 actually for his debut, and then it was 18 was his debut with Inter.
Yeah.
But
can you imagine if every player had to wait 20 years to play in one big tournament? I mean, some of them would like...
But unlike some of these other old guys you see in tournament, Pandev's actually pretty durable. He's played quite a lot of minutes this season.
Yeah, and he's done well. He's scored
for Genoa.
8 goals or something.
You wonder about the supporting cast, because obviously there's a lot of up and down in terms of quality. Alioski at Leeds is a great story about how kind of he came back when it looked like at one point he was going to quit. Mm. I love the fact about Alioski. I swatted up on Alioski. I will freely admit. So the two big coaching influences in his career have obviously been Marcelo Bielsa, fine. But you know who it was before that? In Switzerland at Lugano. Zdenek Zeman.
Like
two of just the most iconoclastic people teaching you how to play football and kind of dragging you back into the game.
That's
a pedigree. And then Elif Elmas, who people are very, very excited about. I think this season at Napoli, I think he only started 3 games, but he came on as a sub, I think,
in almost
every game.
He's still young.
He's 21 years old. He's still very much a raw diamond. But, Elif, I think, means diamond or gem or in Macedonian. So
that's
pretty cool. So keep an eye on that.
Yeah, definitely. Great experience for those players. Not for Pandev, who's next going to be president of his country, but for the younger ones like Elmas.
A new experience for him. England, Group D, England, Scotland, Croatia, and Czech Republic. Now, it kicks off with England against Croatia. This is a replay. A rematch of the World Cup semi-final 3 years ago. I have to say, on that occasion, England lost that game for different reasons. One of them, I thought they were completely out-thought up here and out-thought on the pitch. They're deeper and more talented now, but are they better? Has Southgate progressed? Or are they... clear favorites in the group, I guess is what I'm asking.
So I think they are a clear favorite. I think on paper, they're a much better squad and a much better team than they were 3 years ago, because some players who were not there even, who've exploded, you know, the likes of Phil Foden, Mason Mount. I think if this Euros was played really in 2020, they would not be Mount, they would not be Foden. So I think, and I think this is a really good thing for England to have all this incredible attacking talent. There's a few things here. As you know, I'm not a big Southgate fan at all. I don't think that in terms of the identity he could have given to this team, and I know international football is very different to club football and it's harder to do, but still, I still think that they should be playing far much better than what they do right now. And it's not Southgate's fault if he could not play his strongest 11 in the two games they had to prepare for these Euros because of how far United City and Chelsea went into European competition. So that's fine.
It's not his fault, but...
But it is a bit.
But we think it has an impact. It will have an impact.
Of course.
On these guys who step on the pitch on Sunday against Croatia. Completely. These are people who will... hardly have trained together.
Yeah.
And that, I think even now, like, I struggle to think what the 11 is going to be. I mean, I can kind of guess, but there could be so much change.
Yeah, completely. And also, whatever that 11 is, they haven't played together since never, and maybe not since March, because there's clearly going to be some players who haven't been taken part in the last two games. So I find that a bit disturbing. England usually, well, certainly at Euros, always starts wrong. I mean, they've never won an opening game at the Euros.
I don't know if that's relevant, is it?
It is relevant, because I think it shows you that it's, you know, they may be finding it difficult from the beginning. And I just think also they've got an issue with keeping leads, because every time they're in the lead, every time they go in front, and you talked about the semi-final of the World Cup 3 years ago where they were in front, and they keep letting teams coming back into games, sometimes for a draw, sometimes for a defeat as well. And I just think there's an issue somewhere, and must be with Southgate's substitutions, if you can't keep a lead when you're winning and yet you let the opposition come back every time, pretty much.
There is a scenario where, given that it's England, given that it's home, given that historically these, I want to massively generalize, and maybe this generation will be different, but historically English players do not deal very well with pressure.
Yeah.
On top of that, they are effectively playing at home.
Completely.
You could see, add in the fact that they start tournaments slowly. And again, I put a lot less stock than you do in historical stuff. I don't see how it's relevant what happened in 2000. But it is another factor that could weigh in people's minds. If they don't beat Croatia, and then the Scotland game turns into the kind of zoo that often these Scotland-England games often are, and then all of a sudden, they're in a must-win situation against Czech Republic. It could get pretty tasty pretty quickly. Maybe not in terms of going out, but in terms of finishing as a three seed, and then you go and play somebody really good.
Yeah, you're right.
That's got to weigh on you a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. And then when do you start thinking of, okay, the team that will finish second in this group will play the team that finishes first in the France-Germany-Portugal group? Is there a point where, and maybe there isn't, you're such a competitor when you're at that level that you want to win every game and finish top of the group. However, is there a part of you who think this is better if we finish second and not win?
That's insightful. I didn't even look at that part of the draw because I don't like getting ahead of myself, but that could be really...
You know, almost in the way that at the World Cup, it was good for them in the end to finish where they did in the group, so they went into the easiest, if you want, side of the draw.
No, that's a good
point.
And
Belgium went into the hardest side of the draw.
I'll go even further. Psychologically, I think these guys would suffer much more if Germany wins that group and they have to play Germany than if they have to play France, even though France are a much better team. But knowing what we know about England, so that would actually be a really, really big scenario. But then again, for England to finish second or not win the group, somebody else would have to win the group. And I look at this Croatia team, and amazing, huh? They're all older. And I think they've lost players who, I think at the World Cup, I think I went to 5 or 6 of the Croatia games. And what you could see was this, just obviously tremendous team spirit, tremendous unity, but you could see the veterans really making their experience count. Yeah. And they gave the impression of outworking everybody else, especially Modric. I mean, you see Modric at the end of games, and I mean, he looked like he was a corpse because he left everything on the pitch. He's obviously had a very good season. He obviously is at that older stage where he can manage his body in short spurts. They've obviously lost people like Mandzukic, Subasic, the goalkeeper. I think that there's some issues there. But I wonder how much do they still have? How much can Zlatko Dalic still bottle from 4 years ago or 3 years ago?
I have to say, as much as great as they were in 18, I think for me this is still an OAP team. I'm sorry. I know the older ones, well, not even the oldest, but have retired. I saw them against Belgium the other day and I didn't see any energy. I didn't see any intensity. I didn't see...
But that's the Croatia thing, right?
Yeah,
They know they don't have a lot of it, so they use the intensity when it matters.
True, but I still think, and if you look on paper, it's such a talented squad. You know, even the one that came in, like the youngest one, like Brekalo, for example, and there's still talent there. It's just, I don't know. I really don't believe in them. Right. Maybe wrongly, but I don't believe in them in this moment. I think they'll flop.
Where are we with the Czech Republic?
It's an interesting one. They would be solid, and they would be hard to beat, and they've got.
Yeah, they looked real solid and hard to beat against.
No, I mean, Italy were good, and it was not their strongest 11. But you know what I mean? I think there would be a threat on set pieces, of course. And they've got some good, gifted players. I mean, Adam Hrozek, which is their big hope and promise, who's 18, who's a wonderful talent, who I really hope we get to see a little bit in this tournament. Fantastic. Patrick Schick is full of talent.
But so inconsistent.
So inconsistent. And I think this is a team that... that could explode very quickly.
You know that Suchek played, you probably knew this, right? He played like every minute of every game. Yeah, even the one game where he got sent off, he was sent off after the night. Made sure he was sent off for the 90th, after the 90th minute. The guy, he's the size of a building. The guy, and he runs all day.
That's crazy.
He's some kind of cyborg. Like he's some kind of like half man, half machine. He will create matchup problems, but
and at club level they did well, you know, pretty much all of them, and there's a big core obviously of players who play for Slavia or Sparta. And
I do think though that Croatia are still talent wise and experience wise are level above. So I think it's going to come down to them or Scotland. Scotland with the two left backs, who I'm assuming Tierney's going to play as a third. I don't want to be.
I love it. You know, of all the questions we ask about countries like this before, and you know, how do you play the Griezmann, Mbappe, Benzema thing? You know, what do you do with Kimmich? For the Scots, it's like, how can we play Robertson and Tierney together? And I mean, they're all great, great questions to ask and dilemma to solve. But
So I guess they're going to play. They've been playing a back three. So Tierney's going to be the left side at center half, which I know he's done that for Arsenal occasions. But I just kind of think like, all right, it's suboptimal having him there, because he could give more on the wing, but then he's got Andy Robertson on the wing, so obviously. The thing about Robertson, this shocked me. You know, he started 61 games in the last 9 months and 1 week. I don't know what that guy is made of. And he plays with so much energy.
The performances haven't been as good as the ones from the season before either. So maybe he played too much. And we said many times through the season, and for all the people who listen to us, you know, what about resting him? What's happening to Tsimikas, who joined?
I think he was rested in a Champions League game where he came on. I think it was the last Champions League game. Yeah, and also the third round of the FA Cup against the Muppets or whoever they were playing.
You know what I would do? I would play them one left back and one left midfielder. And they can bomb forward one after the other, so you can rest. Instead of having to do, like, let's say, 5 high-intensity runs on your left-hand side, you do one, and then take a breather while the other one does the run. And then I think that could work. It's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Steve Clark, really, listen.
It's good. It's an interesting one because, you know, McTominay's been playing in the back three.
Yeah.
But they have a defensive thing. It's Ryan Jack, who's unavailable. So I wonder if you'd be tempted to put McTominay back into midfield and go 4. I don't think he's going to do that.
And
again, we expect them to be so far back that maybe it'll be, you know, effectively it'll be it'll be essentially the same outcome.
And they've got home games too, so you never know. I think Scotland could do well in this group. It would depend a lot on Croatia.
All right, so we both have England winning the group though.
Yeah.
All right, followed by Croatia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
But no. You know what? I think Croatia will flop. Croatia will finish third, and I'll go Scotland for second.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, let's take a look at the other two groups, Group E and Group F. Group E, we have Spain, Sweden, Poland, and Slovakia.
Is the COVID group?
The COVID group. Come on. You mean, look, we're going to get to that in quick hits a little bit. But when it comes to Spain, going into the tournament, I thought, man, we have a lot of good players. I like Luis Enrique because one of the people I respect most in football, Franco Baldini, once said, Luis Enrique is the man all people of good conscience secretly wish they were. And it's one of those kind of cryptic quotes.
Okay, yeah.
But then I look at this, and between the weirdo choices he made, I can say, like, you're going to walk away a fool or a king. You're going to walk away from this Euro being like, aha, you decided to be unconventional. You decided to leave Nacho at home and bring Eric Garcia and
Sergio Ramos,
all these choices, right? And bring 24 players instead of 26. And it worked out for you, and then we're all going to praise him, and Malcolm Gladwell will write a book about him and whatever, right? Or people say, like, dude, we just had a pandemic. Everybody's stretched. And what do? You make these stupid choices. You choose now to go and be unconventional and whatever, and you screw everything up. This is kind of the crossroads,
right? Yeah, it is. You're right.
I don't mind somebody putting themselves on the line like that.
No.
And I respect Luis Enrique for that. I just don't know it's going
to
work.
Yeah, and I don't think he knows himself, to be fair. And also, I mean, he's had a rough time, of course, and he was out of the game for a while for the reasons that we know, and his family, and then came back, and then we see some really good things, of course, the way they destroy Germany. And then sometimes you watch them play and they have a lot of the ball and they do nothing with it. And you think, like, okay, how is this going to work? You know, maybe their best player is Marcos Llorente, who's going to play a right back. He looks like, certainly that's where he played against Portugal in a friendly just before the start of the tournament. And on top of that, you've got all this mess with COVID, the fact that players train on their own, the fact that they've got like loads of bubbles everywhere with under 21s being there in case ready, the other six not under 21 preparing just in case, and they might of them might play.
Kepa and five other
Kepa dudes. Kepa and Albiol and Rodrigo and people like that. And you're thinking, like, what? Plus no Busquets and no Diego Llorente, and you're thinking, like, how is this going to work? Unless you use this to make yourself stronger when you finally all get together and the tournament starts. But I don't know. And this is not a group as well where you could just go in and think, oh, this is okay, you know, even if we just 50%.
It's a good point. I really like Gerard Moreno.
Me too.
And I think if you can ride the form that he's been, 30 goals is a ton of goals, in a season. And he's so unselfish. He's one of those strikers that, you know, it's like a poor man's Harry Kane. He scores and he assists and he does all this other stuff off the ball, not many strikers do. But I just have so many question marks. I feel like I don't have any idea what Spain are going to look like when they actually show up. Mm-hmm. And that's why I project forward and I look at Sweden and Poland and I say, these are some pretty good, solid, deep sides.
Yeah.
Sweden, you know, if they do well, people are going to say it's a blessing in disguise that Zlatan didn't show up. But Isak, certainly 17 goals this season for La Real.
Yeah.
It feels like he's found his dimension. This is a guy who, you know, scored on his debut when he was 16 years old and then scored again in the next game too. And everybody thought it was going to be the big thing. Went to Borussia Dortmund, that factory of young talent, and did nothing, which
maybe it was a bit too early, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe Borussia Dortmund don't always get it right. But then he's really come into his own. And you've got, you know, Emil Forsberg, the little elf, who is fit going into it. And you have a pretty solid defense as well.
Yeah, it's a right blend between the experience and the youth. It's just about Kulusevski. I think if Kulusevski ends up missing this tournament because of his positive case of COVID, I think that could hurt them a lot. Because whether he was going to start or not, it's a different. But he's such a talented player.
He's such a game changer off the bench.
Yeah, exactly. And had such a good end of the season with Juve, with quite some momentum, some good performances, that I think he would help them a lot. But this is a team that has gone fine tournaments before, that again, as we said, has the experience, the youth, some really talented players, and I think Isak can be a really good it wouldn't be a revelation because we know him, but you know, like as a first in a first tournament like this, could do really well.
Poland, you've got arguably the best center forward in the world, unarguably the guy who broke Gerd Müller's record in five fewer games, and who brings so much and carries a whole attack by himself. That's pretty impressive. He's got the guy to set him up in Piotr Zielinski. Yeah. The poor man's De Bruyne, as I like to call him. There's a lot to put stock in Poland. And they made an interesting choice because in the past, it felt like they were less than the sum of their parts. They have a manager in Paulo Sousa. And look, international management is so hard to judge, especially over the last couple of years because they had so little time. But I thought Paulo Sousa was a brave choice because he's a proactive manager. Yeah. He's a ball-playing manager. He's a guy who's not afraid to take risks. And I think in some ways, having a foreign manager frees you a little bit from a lot of the pressure that sometimes you would face at home.
Yeah.
Are they better than Sweden? Can they win the group?
My only issue is that they usually don't do it in those big tournaments. You know,
It doesn't matter.
But it does, Gab.
But don't bring up the usually past because
I know, but still.
Different eras, different players, different environments.
I know, but this is a squad that's been together for a long time. As well, and I just wonder if psychologically there's a barrier there somewhere, there's a hurdle that they can't go over to do well like they should do with the squad that they have, or certainly better than we've seen them recently. So I don't know. I think Sousa is a very good appointment, and I think Lewandowski, and I know it's different to play with this team than to play with Bayern, but if he carries that momentum a little bit, but again, he will. I feel the pressure on Lewandowski is so big. It's like, okay, you have to carry pretty much all of us and then qualify us for the next round and then try to go one further in the quarterfinals. And I just think it's a lot of pressure on one guy.
It's a ton of pressure, and it's one guy who's going to have a different supporting cast, obviously, than he has at club level, which is used to some degree, but it's still I think, a big ask for them.
It is.
If we had to predict, is this one of those groups where it's likely three teams go through?
I think it would be one of the groups where the third qualifies, yeah.
And everybody beats up on poor old Slovakia. Now
we like Marika, I'm sick. Of course we do. Who doesn't? But, you know.
It's a story, though, right? He spends 10-plus years in Naples, becomes iconic with a big mohawk, goes to China to make some coin, comes back. I think he went to Gothenburg.
Yeah,
he's going to go to Trabzonspor next year. But it feels like a lot of the historic players that Slovakia had, who are older now, who got them to tournaments and you know, caused some upsets in the past.
Yeah.
These dudes are all gone now.
Yeah.
And he looks around and he's like, yeah.
I know. And you know, that was a great generation for them. I mean, to do well. And I just think that they might be a little deep in terms of talent coming through, maybe. And that it's good for them to be there. It's great experience for some of the younger ones. And they will try to make it worth and be solid and hard to beat and all of that. I just don't think they've got enough in that group, certainly.
All right, let's go to Group F, which most people would have on paper as the toughest group, given that it is Germany, who are four-time World Cup champions, as they never, and are still Germany and will always be Germany. Yep. So everybody wants to knock them off their perch, but that's because they are on the perch.
Yep.
We have France, who are the reigning world champions,
who
I've mentioned once or twice. Yep. Portugal, who are the reigning European champions, and who I think are better this time around than they were in 2016. And you have Hungary, coached by my boy Marco Rossi, who feel like they're a little bit along for the ride. but let's start with the world champions, because you take essentially the same group and then you add Karim Benzema. Not just add Karim Benzema, who's had a monster season.
Yeah.
Sometimes making a choice like that can destabilize a group.
Not this time, though. There might be issues somewhere, and there will be, and I will come to them in a bit. But I don't think Benzema is one because...
Well, he comes in for Giroud and it's the same thing. He does the Giroud job from 2018.
Yeah, although it's a different job, and I think they will play differently with him. And we've seen already the link-up play between Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann. That has been pretty good, albeit against Wales and Bulgaria. So,
10-man Wales.
Have to wait. Yeah, 10-man Wales, you're right. And Benzema didn't score in those games and came off with a dead leg, which is fine for the Germany game. But came up quite early against Bulgaria. I just think on paper this is a fantastic squad that has everything, literally everything, from your starting 11 to the options that you will have on the bench, the likes of Coman or Dembele or Lemar or Ben Yedder or Giroud, even at the back. It's incredible. I even wonder if France ever had such a talented squad.
You're that impressed with it?
Yeah, really.
On paper, the fullbacks are still Pavard and Lucas Hernandez.
Okay, yeah, true. And Pavard than, because I know what you said, more Pavard than Lucas Hernandez.
You have two centre backs playing fullback, yeah?
Yeah, although I think Lucas Hernandez is a very, very talented player who can play centre back, left back. Pavard, I agree with you, I'm not the biggest fan. But even if you play Koundé, who can play right back, who played right back with Sevilla this season a few times, that would be fine with
me. No, but that brings me to Deschamps. Now, you know my thoughts on Deschamps. I think in 2016, France were overwhelming favorites at the Euros.
Yep.
And it's not just that they didn't win the final. I don't think they looked particularly good throughout the tournament. Mm. Not to the standard you would have expected when you're playing at home and everything. They win the World Cup in 2018, playing an approach which I think was quite different from that of the other top clubs, and it worked because, you know...
A bit more
defensive. And now you do it again. And again, look, if you're going to play that way, hey, you might as well have, you know, center backs masquerading as fullbacks like Deschamps does. But I do wonder, there's always, when you play that way, there's always the risk. If you make one mistake, you go a goal down. Can you then recover? How well can you recover if you're not used to being more proactive?
Yeah.
That would be my main question.
Yeah.
Have they knocked on? Is Deschamps tactically as good a manager as he needs to be?
We will see. We will see. You're right. I mean, he's someone
who... We should know because he's been in the job for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, and so for me, the answer is no. I think he is. Okay. And the fact that he would have 5 subs, like everybody else...
That, I agree. That is a
factor. Then if you can bring on Coman and Dembele and Rabiot and Giroud, then suddenly the whole thing's changed. And we've seen, certainly in those two games against Wales and Bulgaria, him starting with this sort of 4-4-2 with the diamond midfield with Griezmann as a 10 and then Benzema and Mbappe, and then changing things into a 4-3-3, a flat 4-4-2 to have different jobs. And I think to face different scenarios in the games that are going to come up at the Euros. The issue I have is the lack of width they will have in this diamond 4-4-2, because
especially when you don't have the attacking wing back.
Exactly. And I think Pavard and Lucas Hernandez will have to try to provide a lot of that width to be able to balance this team right. Otherwise it would be too easy to defend against, because Benzema is, you know, comes inside, he's at the center, so is Mbappe, so is Griezmann, so is Pogba, and Kante is running around everywhere. So if they can get this right, that balance, whether from the start or halfway through the game, will you bring on Coman or Lemar or Dembele, then I think that can work. I just think it's too good to be true, in the sense that everybody, from Mourinho to Buffon to Rooney to you, to every man and his dog, saying, oh yeah, France are going to win it, France are going to walk in, look at the squad, look at this, look at that, which is true. But there's that sort of jinx factor that we saw before the final of the Euro 2016, where everybody was saying, oh yeah, you've got this, don't worry, you've got this. And I was like, I don't have a good feeling. And maybe we are too confident. Maybe we are too arrogant, which we are by definition anyway, and by nature. But maybe for this we are. And it's very, very rare, Gab, that the outstanding favorite ends up winning this big tournament.
Could another concern be in front of the back four, in the sense that you can get N'Golo Kante to sit and do that, but he doesn't do that at club level. He plays a different football. He's still older. He's still coming off his injury. Mm-hmm. I think at this stage of his career, he's more effective and more of a game changer playing differently. We saw Tolisso play there, I think, was it in the last game?
Yeah, the last two games. It was interesting because...
But Tolisso's made of glass, so...
Yeah, but for 7 games, hopefully, or even maybe less than that, you could take the risk. What was interesting against Bulgaria, and again, it's only Bulgaria, and it's very different, but depending on where the ball was lost and where they were either trying to counter press or something, then you had a different holding player. So Kante did it at times, and Tolisso did it at times. And when you looked at the heat maps of them two, it was actually quite very similar.
Right.
So I like this kind of fluidity of, no, it's not just you sitting. It could be you, N'Golo, or it could be you, Corentin, depending on where we lost the ball, what the shape of the team is. And I think they're intelligent enough, both of them, to be able to adapt. And okay, now I'm the one a bit higher up with Pogba. No, I'm the one a bit higher up with Pogba. And I think that could work. I don't know if it could work in a final against Italy, or, you know, against very, very solid tactical teams, or huge teams. But certainly, I think that would be the idea.
The reason I'm more hopeful about France, just to conclude this too, in addition to the fact that this is the most talented team, is that we see time and again that Euros and World Cups are won by very talented players who perhaps are coming off not great seasons where either they've been injured or they missed time. And I look at France, and you know, Pogba's been fine, but he's not had a stellar season.
Yeah, yeah.
Griezmann certainly hasn't had a stellar season. Dembele hasn't had a stellar season. It's almost like if France do well, it's more likely one of those guys will be the protagonist than an Mbappe or a Benzema.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, by that standard, if we move on to Germany, the story dominating is Müller and Hummels coming back. With the system he's played with the wingers and whatnot, you have a Müller problem, because the position Müller plays for Bayern, if you play back three, doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So we're talking Müller at center forward, Müller out wide. I mean,
it worked against Latvia. I'm not sure it could work against France, Portugal, or even further down the competition. I don't understand this obsession he has with the back three. I really don't get it. Okay, it suits Gosens because he plays like that at club level, but I don't even think, and Rudiger, okay, I gave you that, but I'm not sure even for Ginter and Hummels that is the best, unless you play there because Hummels can't play in a two anymore, in a back four, maybe. But I just think he hinders so much the rest of the team that why just not go back to a 4-2-3-1 or even a, you know, I don't know.
See, there's so much talent in that central midfield that you wonder, why am I giving up a slot to one of those three at the back?
Completely.
You know, when I can impose myself and others can defend higher up the pitch, you know, unless he has concerns that physically maybe, you know, Kroos and Müller, but Müller should never be a concern because he does it week in, week out.
Yeah,
I know Müller's older, but energy wise, he's what it is.
Crazy.
No, I agree with you. I think Germany, it's still Germany, so we're still going to predict them to go very far in the tournament.
They're always dangerous.
There are issues there,
and
I wonder also if there's going to be fallout from 2018, because let's not forget, it's not like post-2018 they had the Nations League nightmare. It simply hasn't clicked for them, and you're inserting two new elements in there all of a sudden. I don't know.
And the worst for them, because they play France in the first game, and it's always bad to lose, of course, but especially, like you said, after what happened in 2018, but even what happened in the last 2 years of really some bad lows. I mean, we said the defeat against Spain, but the defeat against North Macedonia was even worse, I think, for Jogi Löw. You lose that game, and then you play Portugal in the next game, where already your head could be on, you know, your position could be on the line. You're thinking, uh-oh. So even a draw, I think they will take, even if they don't play well, even if France are the better team, or even the other way around, you take that, and then you move on already to the next one. But I think that could be a big relief if they at least don't lose that first game.
We should talk about Portugal next. However, since we want to leave Cristiano for last, because he's the greatest in build of suspense, a word on Hungary. I love my boy Marco Rossi.
Yeah.
But it was always going to be difficult for them without Szoboszlai.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge blow.
I kind of think the real things that they have going for them are Peter Gulácsi, who you know, will be kept busy. And the fact that their home games, there'll be full attendance in Hungary because they somehow 60, conquered COVID.
COVID has never existed there.
Yeah, other than that, are you thinking three and out?
I think so. I mean, I want them to do well because they will be at home. And it's a shame for Szoboszlai. But they have big Willy Orban at the back. They've got a player there who could do something, but you know, as in terms of like be solid, be defensive, let's see how we can maybe manage a goal on set piece or on a counter attack or something. But yeah, it's hard.
But against Portugal, France, and Germany, that is a big ask. So let's go to Portugal, because I think, like many, I don't think I'm being very original here, but This Portugal team is more talented than the one that won the Euros in 2016.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo's going into the tournament in better form physically. I don't know if he's coming off a better season, but certainly 2016 he had fitness issues. Here he does not.
Yeah.
I think this was his best season at Juventus. Scored 29 goals in the league. It's two fewer than the year before, but still, I think he played better. He had some big games where he went missing, but overall, he's up there. My concern is, and obviously you have Ruben Dias, who we all adore, at the back, but my concern is, I don't know how you can make these pieces fit together rationally. I'm talking about the attacking pieces. Mm. Conventional wisdom has that Cristiano should play with a center forward next to him. Okay, fine. If you put Andre Silva, whatever, next to him, but then how do you accommodate the other players? How do you accommodate then Bernardo and Bruno?
Jota.
How does that work?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a
and
good
Jota,
question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah,
Joe
it's
Felix
a great luxury to have. You know, it's a bit like Southgate with England and, you know, where maybe Deschamps with France, to have all those attacking talent and then trying to find the right formula. The problem is there's no time anymore because you play on Tuesday. And two, I think Cristiano could be the key, but maybe the problem of the key as well. Of finding the key in the sense that was best. We've seen him against Israel playing on his own up front in a 4-3-3 with two wide players, and then with Andre Silva at halftime for 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes in the second half. I don't know what best. My issue is that Fernando Santos being such a defensive-minded coach, which is, that's how they won in 2016. I don't know how you just switched the switch to go, okay, let's be attacking. Let's have Bruno and Bernardo and Jota and Cristiano and Andre Silva, and it would all work fine and find the right balance and find the right system and all of that. I just don't know if you
I wouldn't be surprised if he makes some tough choices, maybe even plays. I wonder if we might see Jota at center forward, simply to make those repeated runs and then do something sophisticated when he goes out and whatever.
And Cristiano starts from wide and then comes inside.
No, or maybe Jota. Maybe he plays. Cristiano plays next to Jota. Something that we haven't seen yet.
And the problem of that is, where do you put Bruno Fernandes then?
That is a problem. Maybe it comes down to you have to make a tough choice between Bruno and Bernardo Silva. I don't know.
It's great, and I can't wait to see that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's not just getting your 11 most talented players on the pitch. It's getting them on the pitch in a way that makes sense. And frankly, Jules, this is part of the reason why we love this sport.
Exactly.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Euros. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Paulo Fonseca is now in advanced talks with Tottenham Hotspur. They're basically swapping managers with Roma, Jules.
Yeah.
And they listen to us.
We told you a long time ago, go for Paulo. He's good. He's got a strong identity. He knows what he wants to do. It's a good project for the younger players, for the first team. It's attacking football. Of course, it doesn't always work. And at Roma, they were up and down. But I think it potentially could be a very good appointment.
Yeah. Not done yet. We need to stress.
Yes,
Conte gave his version, by the way, and said, like, look, you know, I'm only going to go someplace that matches my ambition,
i.e.
my budget.
Yeah.
The project. Always the project.
Meanwhile, still at Spurs, Gab, Fabio Paratici should be announced as the new sporting director on Monday. What will he bring to Tottenham?
It's interesting. People can judge him on his Juve years. I think he's made some mistakes. I think at Juventus, it was very much a group effort with him and Pavel Nedved.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's one of those things where, like, oh, look, but I made the good signings, and look, Pavel brought in, you know, Ramsey and Rabiot and this other stuff. It'll be interesting. He's got a good network. He's got a good vision of football. He made his name at Sampdoria, where he did really, really well before that. I'll be curious to see how it works, because I don't know. I think it's pretty uphill, and Spurs will be dealing with some restrictions. So he's going to have to get creative here. But already Spurs, speaking of, they're being linked with Marcus Thuram.
That's right.
Jules, should we take this seriously? Did they not watch last season?
What? Oh, that's a bit harsh. That's a bit mean.
Isn't as good as 2 years ago. That's all
no,
I'm saying.
No, but he's still in the Champions League. He did well in the Champions League, so only in the group stages. Had some good performances. And he only has 2 years left on his contract. I think it's the right time now if they want to go and if they've got the money, because he won't be cheap, that's for sure. Gladbach bought him for €12 million from Guingamp. And he will be much more than that, of course. But I think he's got talent. He's certainly made for English football, I think, in the term, the strength that he have and the qualities that he have. So I would love that one to happen, I have to be honest. Speaking of Mourinho and, you know, former managers and Spurs, Mourinho told James Corden in an interview that he actually won 25 and a half trophies in his career as manager, because he counts the League Cup final with Spurs that he qualified them for, but obviously was sacked a few days before that. Really, Gab? What about the math?
Yeah, because it was 50-50 that they were going to win the final, right? When they were like, I don't know. I like the line,
I have to say.
I'm going to give Jose the benefit of the doubt and assume that he said it with a big smile on his face. And let's move on.
Yeah.
Inter hope to create a bidding war over Achraf Hakimi between Chelsea and Paris Saint-Germain. Will they succeed?
The problem with bidding wars, Gab, is that you need clubs with a lot of money and really loaded to be able to do that. Right now, I think they have money, and they probably have money to spend on Hakimi around the 50, maybe 60 million mark. And that's a lot of money for a fullback or a wingback already. I think if you want a bidding war to go up to 80, I don't think that will happen. Maybe they will add players to the equation and get 50 plus Emerson or 50 plus Herrera or whatever.
But the problem is, this doesn't make sense for Inter. The whole reason, Inter have to sacrifice somebody, right?
Yeah.
So they need to get money in, so without getting boring with amortization. But they also need cash. They need cold, hard cash.
I know, but I don't think you would get the 80 million for Achraf. So get 60 and then sell someone else for 20 and you get your 80 million. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, but I was just addressing this for like the players plus cash aspect.
Yes, no, you're
if
right.
If you're putting in a Christensen, an Emerson, a Herrera, come on, you can keep Herrera. But okay. You're adding big salaries into the mix.
Yes, of course. No, I get it.
And it's not going to help you cash-wise. So I think this is tough. I hope Inter don't have to go and sell somebody else.
But if you wait for 80 for Hakimi, I think you could wait a long time too.
Yeah, you will be waiting a long time. Yeah, I think you're better off maybe looking at sacrificing somebody else if you have to sacrifice.
UEFA, meanwhile, have suspended disciplinary proceedings against Juventus, Real Madrid and Barcelona over the Super League. Gab, what does this mean? Are they out of trouble or not just yet?
They're suspended. Theoretically, they could resume them. But what this is and we kind of told you this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Madrid got an injunction. Madrid court gave them an injunction when they started because of the other legal proceeding they have at the European Court, the one which would change the face of football, I think, if it's upheld. But that would effectively say UEFA are a monopolist and clubs should be allowed to go and organize competitions by themselves. But basically what Real Madrid said, or the Madrid court said, is like, hey, until that other issue, which we're not qualified to rule on, but the European court is, until that other issue is resolved, you cannot take any punitive action against these three clubs. That's what the injunction means. UEFA pushed ahead with it, but then somebody tapped them on the shoulder and said, hey, you could get in big trouble if you do this. So essentially, all of this is suspended.
Yeah.
If you're Juve, Real Madrid, and Barcelona, you hope that whatever the outcome in the European court is, it just eventually goes away over time.
Exactly,
maybe people forget about it.
Yeah.
While the rebels push on, the six English Premier League clubs who joined the Super Leagues continue to ask for forgiveness. They will pay around £4 million each and agree to stiff penalties should they try to secede again. There's talk of a £25 million fine, a 30-point penalty. Are you impressed with these penalties, Jules?
Yeah, £4 million each. That's not going to hurt them, is it?
No, but then how much economic damage did they actually do?
It's for the principle. Yeah, no problem. And I go to grassroots football in England, in the UK, and that's a good thing. I just want to forget about the Super League and let's move on now. And it's in the past. I don't think it will happen again, or no, certainly not in that way. So, yeah, of course they can pay and they had to be sanctioned.
By the way, those other sanctions, if they leave, the £25 million fine and the 30-point penalty, if they leave, why would they care
about
getting a 30-point penalty? But whatever.
Gigio Donnarumma has reportedly agreed a deal with PSG. As you know, I was always a bit skeptical about how it makes sense. But he will undergo a medical in Rome after the Italy-Turkey game on Friday night. Gab, does this count as a win for him and Mino or not so much?
This is a big L. A big L. This is a loss. So first of all, there's a big dispute over the numbers, because Mino's people put out and oh look, he's going to make 12 million euros a year net over 5 years. A season over 5 years at 60 million. So that would be huge financial gain. Already yesterday, there's pushback from Paris Saint-Germain, where people are saying, well, no, he might get a little bit more than the 8 million euros a year net that Milan were offering him. So if I'm Gigio and I go from this deal where I was in Milan, where I was happy and whatever, and I was a captain in the future and so on, and I was the undisputed number one, to making a tiny bit more in Paris, which admittedly, lovely city, but I got the competition of...
If you stay, even.
If I stay, if they don't put me on the park me somewhere because I've got to deal with Keylor Navas another 3 years. Areola, by the way, Paris Saint-Germain have to put him somewhere. Yeah. He's on a huge wage as well.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, this would be a huge mistake for Paris Saint-Germain to pay him that 12 million. Yeah. I don't think that's what's going on. I think there's more to come on this tale. Spain's players have all tested negative for COVID now, including Diego Llorente, by the way, who had tested positive before. But it's still a messy situation. Luis Enrique said he'd only take 24 players to the Euros, but now he's working with 39 players. 22 are self-isolating and training on their own, probably 23 now that Diego Llorente has come out of quarantine. Sergio Busquets is locked in a room somewhere in quarantine. There's 11 under-21s who are there, and there's 6 reserves who have been called up.
It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And before the 2018 World Cup, it was a mess with the whole Lopetegui sacking and fiasco.
Poor Lucho.
Poor Lucho, who had a hard time, and this is not his fault. But I just think it doesn't help Spain. Maybe they can try to turn this into a positive of like, look, let's make this better. Let's make us better with this. I'm not even sure.
Kepa's getting really good at five-a-side, though.
Yes. Staying with this, Dejan Kulusevski and Mathias Wanberg for Sweden tested positive as well for COVID-19.
Well, it's a problem because also those are two attacking players as well. Kulusevski could be a game changer.
Could be,
on the best, off the bench, maybe. Maybe even Sweden's Tyrese Maxey. How about that?
Yeah.
Celtic have appointed our old friend Ange Postecoglou, the former Australia boss, on a 12-month contract. He's done very well in Japan. Celtic fans be excited?
I think so. He knows the game so well. He's got a good idea. Again, strong identity of the way he wants his players to play. They had to wait a long time for having a manager. I think 105 days or something like that. He was clearly not the first choice, maybe not second or third. But hey, he's there, so make sure you get behind the team. Jorge Mendes was in Milan yesterday, on Wednesday, and he was visited by 4 different clubs, Gab. Inter, Milan, Fiorentina, and Monza. Silvio Berlusconi's Monza. Curiously, Juventus was not amongst them. Was he to discuss Ronaldo or...?
Well, given that Juventus didn't show up, maybe I presume he didn't talk to Cristiano. First of all, I think it's remarkable. Back in the old days, you know, agents would go to clubs. Now, like,
they
he goes and sets up shop in a hotel, and the clubs go to him. Look, he's got a bunch of players at different
clubs. Everywhere, of course.
I think it is significant vis-a-vis Cristiano, because while this continues to rumble on, will Cristiano move or whatever, he obviously doesn't feel right now that he needs to go and ask for clarity from Juventus or from Allegri about his plans. I think Cristiano holds, as we said this before, Cristiano holds all the cards here.
Yeah.
He's got the contract. If he wants to move somewhere, he can do so on his terms. He knows what Juve would want back for him to leave, and they can always negotiate that down if Cristiano wants to. So I think Cristiano's in a good place. Juve have to be smart here, though. Daniel Ek will reportedly come back with a £2 billion offer after his £1.8 billion were rejected by the Kroenke family. Jules, I guess that's what you do. The Spotify founder came forward with one, turned down. It's almost like you're buying a house, right? First one gets rejected, you come back and...
Yeah, I'm not actually that sure that the first bid actually went into the Kroenke table, despite what Daniel Ek says. He said there's another one coming up. I think the Kroenkes won't sell anyway, even for $2 billion. But he can try, I guess, if he really wants to, he can try. I'm just not into this story at all. I don't know why. There's something that I don't think adds up.
You know what I would do, since it's already been so public? I would turn the screws.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be bidding now in the summer. I'd wait till September, once the fans come back, and I would go out there. I have like a big billboard of myself. I'd be on a truck outside the Emirates or something, and be like,
"Support me! I'm trying to buy the club."
People are like, "Oh, these deals shouldn't be done in public. Why the hell not? Why not?" If that's what you want to, gone public, right? He's already hired Vieira and Bergkamp or whoever it was to be his spokesman. Why not?
Let's see. Sticking with Arsenal, Mourinho seemed determined to bring Granit Xhaka to Roma, Gab.
He wants to listen to you on the importance of a left-footed central
in
midfielder.
In the build-up, of course.
I don't know. I don't, like, you knew this was going to happen. He's being linked to Granit Xhaka. Rui Patricio, I don't know if there's a common thread here between the two. I wonder what that could be. the Friedkins are obviously chucking money, and it's one way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know that Granit Xhaka is necessarily what Roma need, but I think from Arsenal's perspective, he's got 2 years left. If you can get the right fee, it was reported that Roma offered 15 million and Arsenal kind of laughed at them. I think fair enough. I think you should be able to get more than 15 million with Xhaka with 2 years left.
I'm with you.
Everton still need a manager. Will it really come down to Nuno Espirito Santo versus Rafa Benitez?
It looks the case, Gab. I mean, certainly Rafa Benitez is in the frame very much so to after managing Liverpool, going to the blue side of the city. For Nuno, he was very close to Palace, and then something happened. Late demands, apparently, that were turned down by the club, and it all went pear-shaped.
So can I ask a stupid question? If you're Nuno, and it comes down to Palace versus Everton,
I know, why even?
Why would you? Does Merseyside skeeve him so much that he needs to live in London?
But what was strange, that he was linked to Everton first, and then that went quiet and away, and then he was very close to Crystal Palace. And now, would he be back on Everton's radar? I don't know. I would love to see Rafa back in the Premier League for sure. And I still think he can do a very good job.
I love the fact that Rafa is so innocent and has built up so much credit at Liverpool that, yeah, he can go and manage Everton.
Yeah,
he's still probably,
everybody would be
it's
okay.
It's the friendly
with it.
Derby, remember?
Frank Lampard has been linked with a return to the Premier League and at Crystal Palace this time. Do you think that would be a good move? It's a bit of a mess right there.
Yeah, obviously it's a team that's kind of pretty much starting from scratch with all those guys going out of contract, Hutchinson obviously moving on. I'm really curious. I haven't spoken to him, so I don't know his mindset. I don't know how hungry he is to go back into coaching and just for the joy of coaching. Obviously he doesn't need the money.
Yeah.
If his ambition is to go and coach a big club again, I'm not sure Crystal Palace is the obvious starting point. I think despite what happened at Chelsea, I think he has enough credit that maybe he can go in a little bit further up the tree if he so chooses. Or what I'd like
even
to see
Everton,
too.
Everton, you know, a club like Everton, for example.
Or even abroad.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, if there's one guy, he always talked about as a player about, you know, wanting to go abroad. Eventually he did to MLS. Why not? The Copa America will begin on Sunday. Jules, well, I don't know. We don't know yet if it's worth celebrating or not.
Yeah, I mean,
celebrating the football side. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
In the meantime, Brazil beat Paraguay away for the first time in 35 years. 2-0 in their World Cup qualifier. They scored early, they scored late, and your boy Neymar scored.
It was fantastic, Gab. I have to say, watching the game, he was so good. He scored, as you said, early, then set up the goal for Paqueta late in the game. But all the differences that he made with the ball through the game was fantastic. I mean, obviously, he hadn't played much with PSG, half of the games in the season, so he would be maybe fresher than someone. We mentioned Robertson before with 61 starts or 61 games this season. Neymar is far from that number.
Neymar en fuego.
Oh. And I think that's panning out well for Brazil and for Neymar before the Copa America will be on home soil.
And I want to add, I don't put much stock in these historical records, as you know, but for those who don't know, and I'm surprising it's probably a lot of people don't know, the reason it's relevant that Brazil haven't beaten Paraguay away in 35 years is that they play them every 4 years. So this is actually a long, long string of games.
It is,
it's not like in Europe where the old, you know, in South American qualifying, it is a proper league tournament and it's played before every World Cup.
That's right. Argentina squandered a two-goal lead away in Colombia and held to a draw, 2-2. But Gab is kind of sort of flown under the radar. But could this Copa America be Messi's first trophy with Argentina? Do you think they can do it?
Well, I find it kind of remarkable. Like, Argentina have issues, right? But I find it kind of remarkable that every time a major trophy comes around, it's like, oh, when will Messi finally win a major trophy?
Yeah.
And that's where I pop up and say, well, he has won a major trophy with Argentina because he won the Olympics and he won the Under-20 World Cup. Yeah. And then people tell me, oh, shut up, that doesn't count. He only has so many bites of the cherry left. He's got the Copa. He got this Copa America. Yeah. He'll have the World Cup. He'll have the next Copa America.
Probably.
And then after that, it gets pretty dicey.
Yeah.
You know, there's only 10 teams in it. Why not?
Yeah.
He's come so close in the past.
I mean, winning it in Brazil as well would be pretty special.
Yeah. If only there were fans there to celebrate. Yeah. Adil Rami, the very handsome Adil Rami, is at it again. What's he done now, Jules?
Gab, he's offered 26 mini extinguisher, fire extinguishers, to the current front squad to remind everyone of what happened in 2018 in Russia, the World Cup, where he was woken up by some of the players who had gone out at 3 a.m. in the morning, and he thought it was a good idea to come out of his room in his pants and take the fire extinguisher to throw... like what is it, whatever
to go and, go and shoot people. Yeah.
So he thought that was really funny. Deschamps at the time didn't think it was that funny because they all had to leave the building and the hotel because the fire alarm started. But it was all good in the end, and he found that funny, and it's a nice little present for the ones who were there that day.
Yeah, I don't believe for a minute that he was woken up. I think he might have been in his room.
He was playing Fortnite. Maurizio Sarri has been confirmed as Lazio manager, and Gab, they had a very curious way of letting us know.
Yeah, they started putting these supposedly cryptic posts on Instagram of like a tracksuit,
yeah,
a cigarette, you know, as if we didn't all know Maurizio Sarri was coming, whatever. a little bit of creativity.
Yeah,
he's got a big job ahead of him. Five new signings, because they're going to completely transition to his version of football. We'll see how it goes. I think he's always fun to have around.
Exactly.
When he's being
exciting.
Himself, be yourself, Maurizio.
Yeah.
All right, but Jules, that brings us to an end, but we have to come back on Monday, because by that point,
yes,
we will be in full Euro 2020 mode.
Yep.
I'll be at Wembley on Sunday for England v. Croatia. How about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.